Today on the show, we discuss Holodrum and Laburna, lands that lay outside the domain of the Kingdom of Hyrule. Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes of our favorite video games. I'm your host, Neil.
And I'm Lawrence.
And today we have with us a very special guest.
Hello there. My name is David Geisler, and I am the co-host of another Zelda podcast. Gentlemen, I'm very excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me on Lore Party.
We're very excited to have you with us, Dave.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show.
Now, today we're going to talk about the Oracle games. Are you guys familiar?
Oh, yes. I have a very sweet spot for the Oracle games. I love them very much. I actually purchased Oracle of Ages. I waited in line, so to speak. It wasn't a particularly long line, but back in whatever it was, 2001, to get Oracle of Ages at a Best Buy in Chicago. And I adored that game. And I actually didn't play Seasons for almost 10 years. For about the next 10 years, I just had moved on to other Zelda games, but finally found a cartridge in a used store and thoroughly enjoyed that one as well. So I think they're little hidden treasures in the Zelda collection, honestly.
Thank you. I feel like nobody talks about these games often enough, and they're honestly my favorites in the series. Or I guess I'll count them as one game, and they're one of my favorites, but I digress.
I feel like I'm the only person that played Seasons first. I didn't play Ages until like years later. I purchased Seasons.
There it is.
Now, let's just get right into it, because I think these are two very fascinating games. And again, you can look at them as one, but whatever. Because they're some of the few that take place outside of Hyrule.
Yeah.
And it has fascinated me just to think about, you have all these Zelda games set in this one kingdom with this deep and rich history and lore that seems to bleed into one another. And yet, here you have this twin pair of games taking place outside of Hyrule, Seasons in the land of Holodrum, and Ages in the land of Laburna. And we don't know anything about them. It's the first time we see them. We never go back. And it's our first big world interaction where Zelda doesn't matter, the King of Hyrule doesn't matter, the kingdom itself does not matter.
Yeah.
And I want to take a look at how that kind of just plays, you know? Especially using all these familiar races and characters and what have you.
You know, when you gentlemen reached out to me and we spoke about this being our topic today, I got very excited about it because, you know, Link's Awakening also exists in a slightly removed experience from what is a typical Zelda game. And I think it's common knowledge these days that that kind of was a end of the workday tech demo project, passion project that the team members were working on trying to bring A Link to the Past to the Game Boy game and then ended up becoming its own game. And that's the way that they kind of made an excuse for that being the way that Nintendo made an excuse for Link's Awakening being so different was they had it, without any spoilers, they had it exist in a space that was not corporal. You know what I mean? It was some kind of ethereal existence. But anyway, they are physical places, and Link gets teleported to them. So they do legitimately have their own logic to them and their own governments and things like that, which is so much different than Koholint Island. So I am very excited to speak about this today.
Yeah, like I remember being blown away as a kid, firing it up, and you have Link on a horse and he's rushing towards a castle. He walks in and it's now like rendered gameplay footage, which isn't impressive on the Game Boy, but it's there.
Whoa, look at this in-game cutscene.
Exactly. And he's interfacing with the Triforce itself, you know, the big prize at the end of A Link to the Past, and he's teleported off. Now, it's definitely worth pointing out, speaking of A Link to the Past, that this is the same Link from that game. This is the Link from A Link to the Past who went through his adventure in Link's Awakening and is now just being pushed off in two more games.
This is one of the
because
most...
Because I feel it's very...
This is one of the most seasoned Links, honestly.
Exactly. It's very rare for us to see the same one in multiple games.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's a little bit of retcon debate as to where the Oracle games originally sat, but it is official now that this is the same Link from Link's Awakening and A Link to the Past and all of that. And I love it.
So why is Link here, right? It's basically to save these lands from their oppressors. In Holodrum, you have General Onox, and in Laverna, you have Varen. We don't know anything about these people, but the game really wants to show them off to us the second we get there.
It's true.
And it's fascinating. Like, I don't know how you guys felt about this, to come into a Zelda where Ganon's not around at all, really. He doesn't matter for the first time in forever, really since Majora's Mask, I suppose, the year prior.
I know we're supposed to be speaking about the lore more specifically on this show, obviously, but I have to say, from a behind-the-scenes point of view, I think Capcom was just really jonesing to make some of their own antagonists, and that's maybe technically where these characters came from, but they sure did a great job building lore around them.
Oh, absolutely. Lawrence, how did you feel knowing you're going into a full Zelda adventure, no Ganondorf, no Hyrule, no sense of familiarity outside of some familiar character sprite work?
I mean, the funny thing is, when I first played this, I figured that there'd be a way for them to... I figured they were going to like try to fit him in, but it was good to go all the way through just seasons and realize he actually wasn't there. Ages, I feel like you really appreciate it more because there's more of a plot to your villain.
Yes.
Than yeah, that's true. There is in seasons. It's kind of just like, I mean, if General Onyx would have just taken his mask off to reveal he's Ganondorf, it probably wouldn't have been a huge shock, but like,
right.
I feel like, the big bad and Ages, her name is
Varen.
Yeah. Varen actually like did a lot of stuff and was like integral to the plot. So, I mean, that one, when I played it, I was like, wow, this is really awesome, because it was kind of like playing Twilight Princess before you get to the very end.
You know, that's a good point. Yeah, there is some of that essence where the big bad has a thread through the entire game for sure. It's not just get to Mordor or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Right. She is a constant presence in Laverna. And something I like about these games, too, is you kind of do get like a sense of geography as well. You know that there's these two lands, and you can tell like, oh, Laverna's to the east of Holodrum because this pirate ship cruises over from one land to the other. So you already know through the story itself that like, oh, we're connected. So if these two lands are connected, it really does make me wonder like how close that they actually happen to be to Hyrule. And I would like to hear your thoughts on this, because it's not like, oh, is it an alternate reality like Link's Awakening or possibly like Termina, which we don't know if that's a real world or not. Well,
I like, didn't they have travel to these two lands from Hyrule in the game too? They had, was it Zelda or Impa?
That's right. Both travel. In the Linked game, Zelda shows up.
Yeah, so she actually...
Pardon me, Lance.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're fine. She actually like travels in, which was good, because I feel like also on top of this being a Zelda game where you're in a different land, this is the first one where it's not like, you know, surprise, it's a dream sequence possibly.
Right.
And I like that nobody cares when Zelda shows up in the Linked game. She's not even a big deal, right. You know? Like, which kind of just goes to show, like, these are real people and creatures living in these lands with their own agendas. Like, I certainly don't care that much about other nations' politics at home, you know? So why would they? Like,
yeah,
they wouldn't be.
They definitely are clearly aware of each other. And when you do play the Linked game, they'll reference certain things about each other. But I don't really recall any specific local knowledge about Hyrule or anything like that. I don't recall any real text or verbiage about them being aware of an other space.
See, my take on the lands is that they're... I have always felt like at least the humans are all from Hyrule or of Hyrule descent. And it just feels like they may have been there in like the last 100 years or so, because like they're like pretty much living in like a tiny, almost like colony style town. And then you get one town, and in seasons at least, you get one town, and then you get the sunken city, which was like, to me, it feels like, oh, this was the original settlement, and then like something bad happens, and now we have this like new place where we basically had to start all over.
Yeah, that's an experience when you get down into Subrosia, is how I pronounce it, where you do teleport there, but it does have a logical and literal connection as a basement, you could say, to Holodrum.
Yeah.
Yeah, you literally have this underground land just filled with lava and hooded creatures that you've never seen with the hoods and robes off, and you can only get there through portals. Mm-hmm. I remember that blowing my mind as a kid in Seasons, because like you had said earlier, oh, you have 4 overworlds now with all these seasons you can change.
Yeah, and then you have a fifth one.
A fifth.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's insane.
It was a little overwhelming at first, and I remember being really emotionally lost the first time I went through a little teleporter, we'll say. And also, because you access Subrosia from a teleporter, I wasn't exactly sure that I was even in the same universe or anything. You know, you really don't know. Maybe you're going to some other kind of experience. But then you do start to realize and learn that there is a literal connection, you know, with when you're making things erupt and of course, the pirate ship and stuff like that. And once you realize that it is a basement to Holodrum, then I started getting very excited about exploring this fifth map, so to speak.
Right. It makes you really think about the interconnectivity of these worlds and how they relate to one another, because that's how the game kind of opens up, which you don't really realize at first, is in Oracle of Seasons, General Onox sinks what is the Temple of Seasons into the Earth.
Oh, yeah.
And it throws everything completely out of whack. Now, I'm sure he and we at the time just think, oh, it's crumbling, it's falling, he destroyed it. Yep. No, he shoved it into this underground world that now just affected this entirely different ecosystem.
Yeah, and they didn't want it. They didn't want it either. If I remember now, you go down there like, hey, this thing just crashed on us.
They don't even know what happened. Like, they have no real contact with the outside world. Again, like, it's almost like, kind of like a parallel to like Vashika or the Garuda or something, you know, or maybe when like really any race in Zelda, I guess, has this in common, like they're trying to stay away and do their own thing and not get involved. They don't care about what's going on in Holodrum. Mm-hmm. So they certainly don't care about Hyrule either.
I like that, you know? when General Onyx does sink this, it basically turns the land into, it gives it like the Ohio weather.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like her the seasons change so frequently. Like it's wintertime, now it's summertime, now it's springtime. Like he just effectively made Holodrum Ohio for a good part of the exactly. game, and you spend all of your time trying to fix that.
And yeah, so I think the only other like thing that this has in common, or that these games have in common, with our land of Hyrule, is that they just use rupees, and I'm sure that's because that's just what we all know the currency to be.
Yeah.
So maybe they are that close if they have the same currency. So now that we've talked about how these places might, you know, be a little different from Hyrule or a little similar, I think we should start getting into them a little more directly. So like we were saying, no one really seems to have, like, as far as Holodrum, at least, no one seems to have any governing body there. Everyone's just doing their own thing. You got Horon Village, you got the Sunken City, and that's that. General Onox buries the Temple of Seasons. They end up in Subrosia, and everything's just in disarray now. Like you said, Lawrence, it's Ohio weather.
Yeah.
So what I'm very curious about is, why is no one doing anything about it? Like, do they only rely on the Meku tree? Like, I don't get their deal.
I mean,
it's true. It is. Everyone is pretty passive, aren't they?
I kind of feel like they just really solely rely on the Meku tree. Like, and I feel like maybe that's why they had, General Onyx and Baron. They like specifically target that. I mean, because like the Meku trees are the protectors of both lands, and I don't know, like, because you even need the, you need to completely restore the Megu tree to get to the final area.
Right, with the 8 essences in both games, the essences of nature and time for seasons and ages. That's right.
It's almost like the Oracle, there's like a balance between the Oracle and the Megu tree for that particular land. And like Holodrum, you know, the first thing when you get to the, before you can even approach the Megu tree, you have to do like the test of courage to make sure you're worthy, and you have to get the wooden sword.
I think it's total bullshit you have to do a test of courage. You are the Link from A Link to the Past. You had the Triforce.
Yeah,
you had the Master Sword and defeated
Ganon. Yeah, but
Ganon.
The Megu trees don't know that.
And like, yeah, you're right. Like, because again, why would they care about Hyrule?
Yeah, yeah. There's like such a disconnect between the two. I mean, you get teleported there, and Zelda kind of just shows up. So I'm almost wondering, like, how far did she walk, or
right? Right. Was that just like a day on a horse?
Right.
Like, I don't care.
But they are like separate enough where they're close enough where we find out that they're still trying to bring Ganon back. But we're far enough away where nobody knows, seems to know who Link is, or at least like Legend of the Hero.
Yeah, you're right.
That kind of brings me back to my point, how, or one of my earlier points, how everyone in Hyrule, and seemingly Holodrum as well here, tries to maintain their separate dwellings, their sense of privacy, because these Subrosians, like, they're mysterious hooded figures. They barter instead of using rupees, like, unlike everyone else. And you can't get into their land without a portal at all. I don't really think it's ever explained, like, why these guys are so secretive, or, like, why this matters to them. Which is always something that fascinated me playing Seasons.
What is this in that question, or that statement? I apologize. What is...
I guess just why... does it matter that they have to be a secret society?
I see.
When you have like the rest of these worlds interacting, like the Gurons, for example, they colonized Holodrum, moving from the Rolling Ridge and Labyrinna. So why are the Subrosians so set on staying put? I mean, even the Zoras were scoping out Holodrum for a place to live.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Is it, what could it be? Is it dangerous for a Subrosian to be up in Holodrum?
Do they ever leave and go on to the mainland?
The way we get down there initially is we see Rosa, who's their celebrity with the orange robe and the big red bow on her hair, that we eventually go on a date with. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, I forgot about that. But that's it. That's the only instance I can recall that they're ever in the overworld.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. So, you know, they can conceivably take a vacation to it, but maybe it's a bit of a E.T. alien thing where if they're there long enough, it's not in their favor. But I'm absolutely just kind of surmising that right now. I'm not sure.
Maybe they hate Mayor Rule.
That's what it is. That's what it is. They're like, this guy. We're trying to create a trade policy, but we don't have seeds, so he doesn't care.
Right, yeah, that guy just is like, no seeds. You guys came from underground. I'm not fascinated by that because there's no seeds involved. Okay, we're going to keep this conversation going. But first, a quick break.
Hi there, I'm David.
And I'm Kate.
And we're the hosts of another Zelda podcast.
There are so many good podcasts out there, and some of them in particular concern The Legend of Zelda.
That's right, Kate, and we are another one of them. That is actually the name of our show, Another
Yes.
Zelda Podcast.
And in our show in particular, we talk about some of our favorite dungeons, characters, boss battles. We have top 10 lists.
Yeah, we do deep dives on game design and production aspects of the different Zelda games.
And we talk about our own experiences. We do some review episodes, talk about our challenges, our struggles, and our victories.
That's right. You know, really just almost anything that has to do with Zelda, we like to talk about it. A new episode comes out every other Friday, and you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and YouTube.
And you can also check out our episodes on our website, anotherzeldapodcast.com.
That's right. All right, we will see you there.
Okay, bye!
to get back into things going on in Laverna now that we've discussed Holodrum for a bit. You have Varin as opposed to General Onox. The way you meet her is, it's a very heavy opening to the game. You don't know it at the time. Impa, who's normally Zelda's caretaker, but who's there watching over Nehru, the Oracle of Ages, for whatever reason.
Yeah, right.
Varin had possessed Impa, and you shove this stone out of the way that blocks evil to allow her through. And she goes and possesses the Oracle of Ages, which I'm sure if that's the second game you played, had to have felt really heavy, because you have the Oracle of Ages who just gets trapped in a crystal like it's linked to the past, like she's one of the Seven Maidens. And you see the antagonist actively now take control of what you assume to be the most powerful figure in the game, as she warps to the past and throws the present in complete disarray. Which,
it's an opener.
That's some high level stuff.
Yeah.
So while we look at the fact that this is a land that has been established for 400 years, as opposed to Holodrum's fairly recent activity, or so it would seem, there's a lot that can go wrong here. So I was so excited to travel back to the past through the gate left open, because now you meet the Meku tree as a little bud, basically. So you now have context to the history of these beings from just seeing the fully grown Meku tree in Oracle of Seasons. And this really just kicks things off. So now you have to really help cultivate this specific version of the Meku tree, get these essences of time, and restore peace to this land, as well as Holodrum.
Yeah. And like, there was more of a, there was more stuff stacked on top of that was riding on you doing all this stuff, just because Varin was messing with events in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And like events in the present, which would ultimately affect like the future. So there was more than in Holodrum, where it's like, you know, the seasons are just crazy here. They had effectively stopped the past, or stopped time in the past while they were building the tower. So those workers couldn't stop working. They couldn't go home. They had to keep building the tower.
Right. This tower that Queen Ambi was building to basically use as a lighthouse for her lost love.
Right.
Which is an incredibly poetic, like, Zelda story on its own. Varin, having gone back using Nehru as a puppet, gets in the ear of the queen, because now, here's me, the oracle, telling you, the queen, right, what's up. And now it's a tower to just rule over the land with an iron fist.
Right.
It's now a crushing monarchy in this land.
And that's a good point too, Lawrence. You were kind of touching on something a minute ago with Oracle of Seasons, or Holodrum, the four different seasons, essentially, it's more of a, it's almost a Rubik's Cube of just, they're navigation puzzles. It's okay, well, if it's snowy, I can get to this place. If it's sunny, I can get to that place. If it's fall, I can get to this place. And it's really just a way, a bit like a really good dungeon. Every time the season changes, it contextually changes the screen you're on, and that might change how you move through the land. But my favorite thing about Oracle of Ages is that the puzzles are almost narrative puzzles. Just like you were touching on, Neil, something that happens in the past, you might experience something change in the future or the present or whatever, the later of the two. And I guess it's the present because you start there. And you don't know exactly why it might be different. And you have to go back in time and try to figure that part out. And that could be its own mini adventure every single time you're trying to figure those things out. And then you can even use it as a tool by affecting things in the past to help things in the present. I enjoy that very much. I think it's a little bit, I don't want to say it's more dynamic. I almost said it's more dynamic, because I think there's something kind of cool about navigating Holodrum. But from an emotional point of view, these time mechanic puzzles, I'll call them, are very rewarding.
Yeah, I think the games are very ahead of their time, almost in like Breath of the Wild sense, where oh, the overworlds are now their own puzzle and mm-hmm. own thing to figure out.
And I think the time travel works better in Labyrinth because they have that history. So, like, you have, you know, I mean, even now, I mean, they have a mayor in present time, but they had a, you know, they had like an established monarchy for 400 years. And like it developed into this other thing where it's in, you know, Holodrome, you just have one guy who cares about seeds more. So like if you go back in time in Holodrome, it's probably not going to, there's probably going to be less damage that you can do. Because there's yeah. like, doesn't seem like there's much history there, but like,
well,
you have
still a forest,
right? Right. Like you can cut down some trees.
Oh man, it's fall now. Jeez.
And like you could mess up the seasons, you know, you can mess up the seasons in Labyrinth, but like that's probably not gonna necessarily affect much. But I think it's the fact that like Labyrinth had that long history with the monarchy, they've got this like city established, like there's more stuff, like how to, like you can mess up how they got to a certain point. Like they have a rich history of like, hey, we did this really well in the past, and that's why we're here now. Where, and so Varen can go back and say, like, okay, well, maybe if I just move things a little bit, you know,
right,
to the left,
which,
to
like,
the right.
How history can really change, like, because right. of Varen in the past, the Gorin elder in the Rolling Ridge gets trapped by boulders, and if Link wasn't there in the past to remove them and help him out, he would have died and the Gorons wouldn't have flourished and they wouldn't have gone to Holodrome.
Oh,
and
yeah.
like, even in this game, like that does affect Oracle of Seasons being these lands nearby each other.
Exactly. So there's like, that's, I think, our back to our, you know, our original conversation about like, this is a more developed land. Like you can see that just because looking at it, its timeline,
right?
Like without Labyrinth, there was probably no Holodrome.
Yeah. So like, looking at like how Varen could have just wiped out the Gorons by accident, because they're such a patriarchal society, I'm sure they would have been crushed at the loss of their leader. She pollutes the Zora Sea. I mean, that's next level stuff. You know, Ganon in the past, sure, he's frozen it or whatever. Zant did the same. She's just actively poisoning and torturing this group of living creatures. And that's bananas.
See, that's why it's funny when you get to like the Linked game and you realize like, oh, this is a larger plot to bring back Ganon. But yeah, like mm-hmm. to that point, like Varen's doing some stuff that like even Ganon didn't do. So like
war crimes are happening,
right? Because in several games all they do is normally they freeze, you know, you freeze it or you destroy the domain, like mm-hmm. physically destroy it. But yeah, this one is just like, oh, it's gonna poison your water supply,
right? And the way you have to fix that, I think it's like, what, you go out to the library, you see the great fairy who you have to, I think, get back to her regular form, because Varen messes with the Great Fairy as well. Like, she's got contingency plans.
Yeah.
So she goes from the most powerful being, I guess, that isn't the tree in this land, to the actual monarch who's in charge of everything, just to further her own little path of destruction and despair and sorrow. We have to step back and ask ourselves, and we pointed at it for a second, like, why does Onox care about messing up the seasons? Why is Varen just having fun tearing it up in the past, turning people into stone and messing with some races? And I mean, these are emissaries of Ganon. The whole point to messing up the lands and part of this revival process is Twin Rova basically enlists Varen and Onox to ravage these lands with sorrow and destruction. And once those goals are accomplished, they light these rooms where the ritual is going to take place. Because if you recall, when you defeat the villains in these games, they basically laugh at you like, oh, you didn't accomplish what you thought. And it's just like a quick little blurb and you kind of brush it off. But once you continue your quest, your story from Holodrum into Laverna or vice versa, here it comes.
Yeah. Yeah.
They get Zelda because she showed up in the Link game. They already have one flame lit because you were already in that land. So now it's going to happen in the other one. And then you being Link, of course, you save the princess. How heroic of you. You beat Twin Rova. She's on the verge of death. I don't think she's going to get a halo and go up to heaven this time, but she ends up sacrificing herself, which that's a pretty big Zelda moment, I think, to have the woman who raised Ganondorf and the Gerudo woman who raises Ganondorf sheds her own blood to bring him back, but that wasn't the plan. It was supposed to be Zelda. It was supposed to be this royal Hyrule family, you know, who's trapped into this spiral of fate.
Right. Which shows that even though they might not specifically mention Hyrule a lot, that there still has to be some sort of strong connection there. Mm-hmm. Just because they decided to bring Ganon back there. You know, like, they decided to revive him in these lands, like, instead of doing it in Hyrule, when all they needed was Princess Zelda.
Right, and maybe Ganon doesn't... He's usually pretty hungry for Hyrule, but, like, maybe if just him coming back in any capacity, if this is his... You know what, here's this thing I can't stop thinking about as you were talking about this, Neil. The Ganondorf in Twilight Princess is the Ganondorf from Ocarina, and it's because he's been sealed away and all this stuff, and we all know this, and it's all very fun. But he had an agenda. He was fighting to come back to Hyrule. He tricks Zant and all of that to have his plan come to be. I was thinking just now, well, Ganon, in the Oracle games, you know, maybe he's just trying to get back one way or another or somehow. But the truth is, I don't know if he had any real say in the matter. I think maybe this was Twin Rova and company trying to bring him back. And I think the reason Ganon might come back ill-equipped or in beast mode, so to speak, is because it wasn't done. They had improvised at the end there. You know what I mean? And yes. So we didn't really get like the full real Ganon's back, baby thing, you know?
Right. This is the first real instance the first real instance, I would say, Link failed. I mean, you could consider where he technically could lose in Ocarina, but it doesn't really happen, let's be real, because we're playing the Zelda game. But
right.
Like, yeah, Link does not protect these lands from these villains doing what they set out to do. And that's true. It's funny because, like, I kept saying, like, oh, Link doesn't need to test his courage or this or that. And despite being the holder of the Triforce of Courage, which is a very important thing in the lands of Hyrule, he goes out to these distant lands, and as powerful and mighty as he may be or once was, what have you, he can't truly get the job done. Well, that about wraps it up. We hope you enjoyed the episode, and if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps grow the show. And be sure to connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at lore_party. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Dave, thank you so much for being here with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
If you have any plugs, please go ahead, get them out.
Certainly, certainly.
Do a couple takes if you like.
Oh, that's fine. That's go fine. I can just kind of wing it here. I don't mind at all. First of all, thank you very much. This really was a blast. We've been chatting for a little bit here. The two shows have been chatting back and forth. I was lucky enough to have both of you gentlemen on one of our episodes where we talked about the top 10 antagonists that came out just about a week ago, I think, as of this episode posting or so. It was an absolute pleasure. It's been fun hanging out with the both of you these past couple days, recording our show, and then me being able to you know, it's not too often when I talk about Zelda that I get to kind of sit back and allow someone else to steer the ship, so to speak. And this was very enjoyable indeed. Let's see, if people want to find Another Zelda Podcast, we're on iTunes and Google Play and all of that. You can just search Another Zelda Podcast. You can go to our actual website, anotherzeldapodcast.com, where we have some blog posts that we have some writers that write blog posts for us, and we have show notes for all of our previous episodes, that kind of stuff. That's just anotherzeldapodcast.com. And on Instagram, we're Another Zelda Podcast. Twitter, it's Another Zelda Pod. There's a theme here. If anyone were so inclined, you're more than welcome to find me on Instagram at Raptor Paint. Actually, Instagram and Twitter, I'm at Raptor Paint. And I do try to post, not behind the scenes things, but my experience with making Another Zelda Podcast on those two accounts. So that's everything.